see you all. Thanks for coming in on this beautiful, absolutely freezing Sunday morning. God bless you all. Okay, so let's take a little journey together. We're back into the world of Midot, work on our character traits. And we spoke, first of all, about the idea of Midot in general, how it's a major part of Jewish thought. Then we spoke about the idea of anger, caste controlling anger. Then last class, we spoke about the idea of revenge, bearing a grudge. We're going to move on this week to an area which, unfortunately, is very popular, unfortunately, in many parts of the Jewish and other religions world, and that is judging other people. What is the view in Judaism of judging others? Are we entitled to look at other people and say, "Cuh, what do I think they're doing? How can they do that?" You know, what's the Jewish opinion on this idea? And it is actually a verse in the Torah. It says the book of Leviticus, Vayikra 19:15, "You shall not commit a distortion of justice as a judge in a court. You should not favor the poor, nor honor the great." And then it says, "With righteousness, you should judge your fellow." Okay, let's go through that verse slowly. You cannot distort justice. Okay? The idea being that God is the ultimate justice, and we have to emulate God, so we have to be just in all our actions. Okay, that's fair enough. Then it says very quickly, don't favor the poor. Why not? I mean, they're poor. Shouldn't we, like, favor them? Give them, you know, take care of them? So this is actually talking about a court of law, according to one opinion, or many opinions, actually. And let's say you have a poor person and a rich person in a court of law. And you look at the poor person, you're like, oh, I mean, look, I know he's guilty, right? I know he stole what he stole, but you know what? He's a poor guy, so I'll just, you know, just lean towards him and make him the innocent one. You can't do that because the poor did something wrong. Now, maybe there's extenuating circumstances, but what they did, and they need to be held. Nor can you honor the great, unless you've got a poor person, a rich person. The rich person did a terrible thing. You're like, you know what? Well, the poor guy's a schlepper. The rich guy, say the commentators, he gives so much money to the community, to the city, to the country. So you know what? We'll give him like a, let him off this time. And the poor guy, okay, he'll do a couple of years in jail, whatever. Or he won't make the money which was taken from him. You can't do that either. That's the idea over here. Do not favor the poor, honor the great when it comes to against each other. You have to be righteous when you judge each other. Okay, so that's a legal reality. And courts of law, which we said already are the basis of society, have to be treated with equality. But that's not a discussion today. There's another way to understand this idea as well, and that is judging other people, the way they act, how they treat you, how they treat others. What is the view on this? Says Pirkei Avot, do not judge your fellow until you have reached his or her place. Meaning, you can't judge anyone else because you don't know what they've been through. You don't know their background. You don't know all the struggles or the trials, tribulations. You don't know what their mourning involved. You don't know what happened to them. You cannot judge them. If you see someone, says Rav Avadia of Bartanora, fail a challenge, do not judge them until you've undergone the same challenge and overcome it. And chances are, in most cases, you haven't. In most cases, you probably haven't overcome that challenge. You haven't even been challenged in that way because you don't know. Right? Maybe you think, well, I go through tests all the time, but you don't know their background, where they're from, what they've been through, how they were brought up. Therefore, you don't have a right to come as an outsider because you are not in their place. That's the idea over here. Okay? And that's what the Talmud says, and Rashi agrees with this. With righteousness, you must judge your fellow. This means you should judge your fellow favorably. That means, and we have an expression, Lekaf dan schut is the famous expression. I hear many, many times people talking about it. Judge them on the side of benefit. Assume, now this is going to be a bit tricky, you have to understand this. Assume what they did wasn't wrong. Or what they did wasn't malicious. That's how we're going to try to interact with people. And we'll see that it could be a person thinks, well, that's crazy. Because I saw them do it. I know they did it. Why should I try to twist my head in such a way to say, you know what? They didn't really do it. But you saw them do it. And assuming they did do it. That's going to be a very famous question over here. Say the commentators, by the way, when you do this, and you're able to judge a person favorably by what they've done to you, and not assume they did it wrongly or maliciously or in a bad for a bad reason, a bad state, if you're able to do that, you're actually fulfilling the mitzvah we're going to discuss. Here's your book. That always goes back. Thank you so much. We're going to assume that by doing this, you're actually showing them love. This is one of the ways we express love for each other. And we'll see why in a moment. So just hold on. But the question still stands. You see someone at work go into someone's pocketbook and take out money. All right? So first thing you think is thief. Okay? So am I expected to say, well, maybe they were walking past the pocketbook, some of their money fell into that person's pocketbook, and all they were doing was retrieving money that was actually theirs. Are you expected to do that? Well, first of all, that can't be right, because it's not your money. Maybe they're stealing and something should be done. So are you expected to report on this person? And the answer is, yeah, you are. So why am I exactly, you can't just like see someone do something terrible and like, oh, nothing to it. Take action. Do something. Right? Speak to the person, tell the authorities, call the police. Whatever needs to be done, needs to be done. So what are we speaking about over here? So we're talking about you can't judge them. Meaning, in your mind, you're going to have to create a scenario which is contrary to logic and say, you know what? Maybe something happened. Maybe something really weird did occur. But I still need to get to the bottom of it. Okay, that was an extreme example. But it could be an email. It could be a text. It could be something you hear someone said about you. You can't immediately jump in and say they did it maliciously. Let's just see how this plays out. And let's have a look at one of the famous sources. Shlomo Volbe was one of the great thinkers in this area. He says, someone who judges others favorably, they aren't imagining it. Really, they're hoping that the person is guiltless. That's what you're hoping. You're hoping, you know what? I'm hoping that what I saw them do, what I heard they did, what I know they did was not really a bad thing. They seek ways of understanding the other person's actions as good. They're judging them and giving them the benefit of the doubt. Dan kaf sechut. I'm going to try to give them benefit of the doubt. This is the extent to which a person must regard another person with a positive attitude and wish to see everyone's actions come from a good source. That's my default position, is that people are good. That is the natural default position. Doesn't mean you're a sucker. Doesn't mean you're an idiot, right? It doesn't mean that every time someone does something which is like bad, oh, they're fantastic. My default position is they're good. Now, I may have to do certain things in order to correct the situation. But my default position is people are good, and it's coming from a good source, you know. You know, when I was a kid, it's all in my head, I don't know why. But when I was a kid, I had a Rebbe in yeshiva, and he kept telling the same story. I don't know, maybe he experienced it, but maybe it happened to him. But he kept saying the story, he goes, imagine it's Yom Kippur, and you see the rabbi on Yom Kippur walking with a cup of tea and a cookie on a plate, right? Right, and they walk past you. You're like, what kind of rabbi is this? What a hypocrite. He's telling us all to fast, and he's walking around with a cup of coffee and a cookie. So he says the natural inclination is to do that. This is speaking to us as children, but we're still children here. And he would say, in your mind, what have you got to say? What have you got to, actually I had a real story about this actually. What have you got to say in your mind? In your mind, you have to say, he's bringing it for someone else. You know what I'm saying? The natural inclination is, he's a good person. I'm assuming he does fast Yom Kippur. He's not a hypocrite. And I'm going to try. And now we live in a world, by the way, where we don't just see things. We hear about things. We read about the internet, Facebook, Twitter. We read about all these things all the time. And immediately we rush to judge people. So it's not so simple you're allowed to do that. Even if it's permitted, it's not so simple. I mean, I know everything on the internet must be true, especially if it makes it onto Facebook. But you've got to try to find... It's actually a story, a true story, happened to a rabbi on the Washington Heights, Rav Schwab, and he said he was walking along the street one day on the Heights, and there was a member of his community, he was actually one of the prominent members of his community, who he saw walk past, you know those like non-kosher food trucks, right? This guy would never eat there, and he saw this guy run up to the truck, buy whatever it was, and eat it. He said, oh my God.
God. This guy would not eat, you know, from those food trucks. He was a kosher guy. He would never do that. And the inclination was, this guy's terrible. How can I do that? Guy's a fake. Right? He's the president of the synagogue, right? He professes to be all, like, religious. And there he is, eating from the food truck. Now, in a snapshot, he's right. Had that made it onto the internet, pictures and videos, we'd be like, hypocrite. But he said, it may be halal meat. Maybe, but halal is not kosher, right? Kosher is halal, but halal is not kosher. So he sees this, and he said, you know what? He said, had to work really hard to figure out some crazy scenario to give him benefit of the doubt. So I said, maybe he's got some kind of medical condition where if he doesn't eat straight away, right, then this... And he's got to eat straight away, and he made this crazy situation in his head, which didn't make sense. But he researched it, and it happened to be true. They got a certain condition, and I don't know, it was a blood sugar thing, I don't know what it was, but the doctor said to him, whenever it was going back 50 years, whatever it was, and he said, as soon as you get, you've got to eat whatever's around you. And in that situation, you're allowed to save your life. You're allowed to eat non-kosher food to save your life. Right? It's not something you have to give your life up over. And so he was permitted to do it. But he said he had to twist his head, you know, upside down, try to find some possibility. But we learn that this is what's expected of you, especially if it's not affecting you or anybody else. This has been him and God. Right? In other words, this is purely a personal thing. Okay? And that's why it says, page 13, Rav Shulman Prachia says, one of the great authors of the Mishnah, everyone has to establish, for example, a rabbi, you have to acquire a friend, and judge people favorably. And some say these three are actually connected. You need to have a spiritual advisor, you need to have a friend in order to relate with, and in order to put those two together, part of that is judging people favorably, okay? So the Rambam, I don't have time to go through this now, but the Rambam says, well, it's not everyone. Some people you know are habitual bad people. You're not expected to twist your head and try to find out, you know, maybe they're good, right? You don't have to be crazy. If someone's really, really bad, you know what I'm saying? If you hear someone, you know, you're not expected to call, you know, Mr. Madoff and say, I don't believe what they're saying about you. I'd like to invest my money in you, right? So I'm judging you favorably. No, that's completely crazy. You're not expected to be nuts. Even if you hear a rumor about someone that they're, I don't know, abusing someone, I don't believe it, call them up, could you babysit my kids 8 p.m. tonight, right? I don't believe it, but I'm entitled to defend myself in case it is true. You don't expect to be a sucker. You don't have to be crazy. But the default position on the average person that we know when you hear something or read something or see something is, I don't believe it. That's really what was expected of a person. It's very, very difficult, especially if everyone's talking about it, and it makes the national press, and everything gets out so quickly. There's a nice story from the Gemara about the great sage Rabbi Akiva, bottom of page 13. And he worked for this very wealthy individual, Elazar ben Hyrcanus, for 3 years. And it used to be in those days that you basically would pay someone at the end of the season. He worked for 3 years. He was very poor, Rabbi Akiva. And on the eve of Yom Kippur, he was going to leave, and he was going to bring his wages home to his wife and kids. And Rabbi Akiva asked him for payment. And Rabbi Eliezer said to him, he says, I don't have any money to give you. Right? And he said, fine, then give me some sheep. He goes, I can't give you sheep either. He goes, pay me in crops. I can't give you crops either. Pay me this way. And he went home penniless. And then, whatever, a little while later, he turned up at his house, Rabbi Akiva's house, and said, here's the money I owe you. And he says, tell me, when I didn't give you the money, what did you think? He goes, I thought maybe you had given your money away to your kids, and or you loaned money out, you know? And when I said I don't have any sheep to give you, I thought basically your sheep weren't, they'd been tithed, and maybe they were put somewhere else, you weren't able to give them to me. And when I said I can't give you crops, you were like, well, you know, my crops aren't ready for giving yet, going through various religious process with them. He goes, everything you said is true. You know, I don't know why he didn't tell him in the first place, maybe he was testing him, but that's like one of the very famous stories of it. So let me give you one of the benefits of doing this. So let's get a little bit deeper. Page 14. What is the idea behind this? Why should we be trying very hard to judge other people well? So there's another idea which is going to apply to every other course we're doing over here. And it goes like this. There's a concept in Judaism which applies right through Jewish and all life called Mida Keneged Mida, which literally means measure for measure. Okay, measure, mida, keneged, mida, measure for measure. And what is this idea, and why is it so important? So measure for measure, you know, I'll explain it to you, but I don't want you to make a mistake, which many people do when they hear this, and think it's karma. You know, like what you put out, you know, people are like, karma, it'll come back to you. Negative comes back negative, but it's going to...
It's not like that. The idea is, if you act a certain way, you are being judged. We are all being judged constantly in terms of our actions, of how the world relates to us, how we relate to from God, from the spiritual realm. If you act a certain way, that action is going to come back to you. You'll be judged in the same way. Let me concretize this very, very important idea. If you speak bad of others, when you speak bad, let me try that again. If you speak bad of others, when others speak bad of you, you will be judged for what you said. In other words, let's say you hear a rumor, which is negative information about someone else, and you spread it. What's happened is you've opened yourself up as a speaker of bad things. So when someone else speaks badly about you, you will be judged according to what they said. Because why should you be protected when you yourself are doing what they're doing? Does that make sense? Is that clear? Let's have a look at the Chofetz Chaim's words. Maybe I'm a little bit clearer. And I'll give you a better example. On a spiritual level. On a spiritual level, yeah. Now we're going on a spiritual level. On a spiritual level, you will be judged the way you judge others.
So can I ask a question, something you said earlier?
Yeah. You can do something about it. You can go up to them and say, why do you do that? You're expected to. You're not going to be a sucker. You go up to them, why do you say that about me? We just last class. Don't. Anybody else? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. By the way, it could be about someone. We actually could do a class next week on words. Yeah. If you hear something bad, you're expected to say, don't say that. As the listener, by the way, you're actually worse than the speaker. Mm-hmm. We'll see that next week. Right? As the listener, you're actually worse than the speaker, says the Rambam, when you hear bad information, even if the information is true. Actually, especially if it's true. What we're going to see is, though, we're constantly being judged. We are judged favorably by God, by the spiritual realm, if we ourselves judge other people favorably. That's it in a nutshell. Did that come out better?
If we ourselves judge
other people well.
Yeah.
We are treated the way we treat other people. Let's have a look at the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim makes it a little bit clearer. That's why he's the Chofetz Chaim. He says, how important is it that a person accustoms himself to judge others favorably? A person's habit of judging others positively, or the opposite, is an important factor in his own status of a tzaddik, a great person, or a rasha, or a terrible person. How so? He says, it's well known to him, that a person's status is determined by whether his mitzvot exceed his wrongdoings or the opposite. Now, you're constantly being judged. Now, if God were to scrutinize our mitzvot, the way we act, we're going to be lacking. Right? Because we're constantly messing up. Right? So you want to judge someone else, but you're doing terrible stuff all the time yourself. We're always messing up. We're always making mistakes, treating other people badly, speaking badly of other people. If, on the other hand, God approaches our deeds with an attitude of compassion, searching out our good points, then our mitzvot, our good actions, stay intact. We're literally constantly carrying around good or bad deeds. Now, all of this depends, this is the punchline, on our own opinion-forming habits towards others. If we judge others favorably, he will also be judged favorably by heaven, as we learn in the Talmud. If one forms negative opinions of others, the ministering angels will speak ill of him. So we're all being judged constantly. There's a constant judgment of how we're doing. That's going to be dependent on how we work on others. Does it make sense? It's a spiritual mechanism, but it's a very important one. Therefore, he says, a person must be aware, while forming opinions about others, be they positive or negative, that actually they're judging themselves. That's what you're doing. You're actually judging yourself. What you put out on other people, if you put out negative stuff, really you're judging, it's actually bouncing back onto you. That doesn't mean you can't protect yourself. It doesn't mean you can't make good opinions, right? And that's not the point. The point is what you give out is actually boomeranging for you, not from that person, but from God. So God kind of gets involved and says, you treat other people well, I'll judge you well. That's midat keneged midat. What you put out comes back to you. That's the idea. Are we clear on this? Okay. Let's jump to the next topic, which is related to it.
which we'll see why a person... So that's like pretty good motivation, right? Because we all want to be seen as doing the right thing, you know? This is based upon, as we saw a few moments earlier on page 15, that a person has to love someone like they love themselves. Very famous verse from the Torah. And it says, don't take revenge, don't bear a grudge against members of your people, and you shall love your fellow as you love yourself. And by the way, what does it say right at the end of that verse? I am God. What's that doing over there? We know. We've already met God a few weeks before, right? What's I am God doing at the end of the verse? Is that a fair question? It doesn't say at the end of every mitzvah, keep kosher, I am God. Keep Shabbat, I am God. It does say it sometimes. It doesn't say that every... Suddenly over here, it's like, I am God. Why do you think that is? Why does I am God suddenly appear on the scene over here? Have to be reminded all of a sudden? I'm reading the Chumash, I'm reading the Torah. Who else am I talking to? My aunt? I mean, who's the... Is that a fair question? Okay. Meaning, well, he's not everyone, because people are... Okay, that's good, that's good, that's good. Okay, I like that. Anyone else? Yeah?
That basically it's a connection saying that if, you know, that God was the creator of us as beings, you know, if we're showing compassion or understanding towards one another, we're sort of giving him his praise.
Very, very similar. If you're right, if you accept the fact that this all comes from God, we're kind of involving God in this whole picture as well. But what's unusual about all these laws? Revenge, grudge, loving other people, they could be very two-faced. You don't know what's going on inside a person's heart. You don't know what a person's thinking. Right? Who knows? Maybe they're taking revenge, maybe they're being honest. Maybe they're judging me well, maybe they're not judging me very, very well. Maybe they actually hate me, but they're acting on the surface of love. We can't tell what a person's and their motivations are, but God can. God knows the real motivation. And as it were, God reads our hearts. So you can fool friends. You can fool family. You can fool your parents. My kids try it all the time. But you can't fool God. So God says, you know what? When it comes to these personal things, it's very difficult to know what a person's motivations are, especially because it's between people. However, I'm going to throw myself in and say that I'm actually involved in this. Meaning that when it comes to your relationships towards each other, I am intimately involved. I know what's going on. I know the motivation. And people aren't going to get away with it. Because God is the ultimate judge. We can't judge. But judging is a good thing. Judgment is good. I need someone to judge. If someone's doing something terrible to me, I've got to get him for it. God says, it's not your job to get him for it. You don't take revenge. You don't bear a grudge. You judge him favorably. There's a system. And it will be taken care of. I am God. I'm running the show. Don't think that the relationship between us and God, like the Shabbat and Kosh Yom Kippur, that I'm involved in. But between you and each other, you're on your own. Good luck with that. All right? That's like, yeah, because people are crazy. No, no. God says, I am God. I am involved in that stuff too. Don't take revenge. Don't bear a grudge. Judge favorably because I'm involved in this whole story of human relationship. And that's one answer. Another answer is because why should we act this way? Maybe revenge is the right thing to do. Maybe bearing grudge is the right thing to do. Maybe judging people terribly is the right thing to do. Says no, it's not. Logically, you may have thought so, but I'm God. I'm superseding any logical thoughts you may have, and I'm involved, and there is a system. And what goes around will come around. And that person will be judged, but God says, I'll take care of it. We're tempted to fight back. Someone sent me a bad email, I want to get it back. Someone cut me out in the car, I'm going to cut them back. Right? Someone stole from me, I'm going to say, I mean, I'm going to try within this sphere to correct the imbalance. But most cases, you're not going to be able to do it. You know? Most cases, people get away with stuff. And the answer is they don't. They don't. God will take care of it. That's actually quite a relieving knowledge to know. That's the reality. It's good to know because, fine, I'll step back and I don't have to like completely let it consume my life. Someone's put it very beautifully. When you have an argument with someone, it's like they're living in your head rent-free. Right? You're constantly carrying this person with you the whole time. Now, you're not living in their head. They don't even care. But they're living in your head. Taking revenge, bearing a grudge, judging other people not favorably is like drinking poison and hoping they die.
That's what you're doing. So we're being told that's not that. Logically, it makes sense. You hit me, I hit you. That's what we would think and have been told. And have learned, that's the default position. The answer is that's not the default position. It's tough. It's really hard. But that's what we're trying to do over here. So big is this idea I'm sharing with you that someone approached Shammai. Shammai was one of the great thinkers from the writers, scholars from the time of the Mishnah. And even before, and he was approached by a non-Jew, and the non-Jew wanted to convert to Judaism. And he said to him, "I want to convert. Teach me the entire Torah. Teach me everything I need to know, standing on one foot." Very famous, standing on one foot. I.e., sum up the whole thing for me, to Shammai. So Shammai took out a stick and get the heck out of here. You're like making fun of me, right? You want to sum up all of Judaism? People have to go at least for 10 days to Israel before they can figure it out. You know, it's on a birthright. They're not going to figure it out in 1 second. So he chased him out. That was Shammai. Then he went to Hillel. Right? He went to Hillel's house. You heard of Hillel's house, right? Not joking, right? He went to Hillel, the great scholar of his day, another school of thought, but he actually went to him. And Hillel said to him, "You know what? I'm going to teach you all the Torah standing on one foot. I.e., I'm going to sum up. I'm going to give the cliff notes. I'm going to give you what? We're going to take all of Judaism." So Hillel was saying, right? Well, the leading scholar of his day. Actually, the halacha, when we follow halacha, usually follows Hillel. Hillel and Shammai argued it out. And we, for the most part, follow Hillel. For the most part, except on 5 or 6 occasions, we always follow Hillel. Hillel says, "I'm going to explain it to you. All of Judaism, one thing. What you don't like being done to you, don't do to other people. That's all of Judaism. That's the entire Torah. Go and study." And according to the Talmud, this guy did go and study, and he said, "I hear it," and he learned more and more, and eventually converted to Judaism. Rabbi Akiva came along after and said, "Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. What we learned over here is a major principle of the Torah." Right? Kids sing it all the time. "Zeh klal gadol." As a kid, you always sing it, right? "V'hafarech kamocha." Love us like you love yourself. That's a major, it's all, everything else in Judaism, everything else, Israel, giving charity, honoring your parents, Yom Kippur, having, whatever you think of that you call Jewish, actually stems from this one idea. It's all encoded in these words. That's the idea. So the question is, why does it just say love other people? Why can't we just be like the Hare Krishnas, those guys with the, you know, the knotted top, and go to the airport, and like, just start hugging, loving other people, giving flowers out. Is that what we're meant to do? Because I haven't seen people do that. I've never seen too many rabbis do that, you know? I mean, I've seen hugging rabbis, but I've never seen people like, you know, randomly like. So they point out there's two parts to this idea. You have to love each other like you love yourself. So Rashi says that means you have to have good self-esteem. You have to love yourself. If you don't love yourself, you're not going to love anybody else. Okay? And we live in a generation with chronic low self-esteem. That's another discussion for another time. But take it as a given for me. We live in a generation where men and women, especially young men and women, which I don't believe existed a few generations back, have chronic, debilitating, low self-esteem. That is what I hear from people or professionals in this field. So first, you have to love yourself. If you think you're garbage and you treat yourself like garbage, you can treat other people like garbage. But we'll leave it aside. What else can we see from this important verse is that it's reflexive, isn't it? In other words, I'm going to use myself as the paradigm for others. I don't like it when people judge me wrongly. I don't like people to take revenge against me, so I will take revenge against other people. I like when people speak nicely to me, so I'll speak nice to other people. So my entire life is, now, what would I do in that situation? Do I like it when people speak to me like that? Do I like people judge me badly? You know, when people turn up late, I go crazy with them. When I turn up late, I've got 1,000 excuses, and all of them are valid. Don't we? We're always like so, we always give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. Well, it was a hard day, it was difficult. I turn up 1/2 hour late, but someone else turns up late for me. So what we're expected to do is turn the tables and say, I'm very quick to excuse my shortcomings. Am I able to do that for other people? Okay. Says one of the great commentators, the Kli Yakar, when this guy, this Gentile came, he wasn't making fun. He actually was looking for this core to build out the rest of his Judaism upon. What is the core that everything else comes from? He wasn't just like, hey, teach me everything, I'm not interested in everything else. He wanted to know the root of it. Shammai, for some reason, had a problem. Hillel was able to give it to him. Okay? That's why he says, he must have requested a method, halfway down page 15, which he could base all the Torah's commandments upon. One unifying principle, i.e. one foot. In order to avoid the lack of clarity that converts, and actually, in our day, all Jews customarily experience. Like, what's this all about? Why am I getting involved in this? He wanted one idea that he could always go back, like a fallback position that he could do, that he could work on. Right? And the idea of being a convert was used over there because they don't learn mitzvah and Judaism from their youth. They've got to create it. In our generation, 99% of people have to create it themselves. Okay? So this is a very important feature for us as well. Therefore, Hillel gave him a brief, all-encompassing principle which he would be able to remember for the rest of Judaism, for everything else that he had to encounter. Okay? I've mentioned this before in other contexts, but the smug, the Sefer Mitzvot HaGadol, says that imagine a person is cutting a piece of meat. Have I told you this one before? I'll say it again. Imagine cutting a piece of meat, right? And while cutting the meat, you cut into your own hand. Don't you do that? It happens, right? Now, imagine you see this. What are you doing? You're crazy? What would you do that for? If you saw me do that, what would you think? I'm crazy. I'm drinking a cup of coffee. I spill the coffee with my right hand. I slap it. Or I trip up with my left foot, and my right foot kicks my left foot. I'm like, this guy's mad. Why? If someone else spilled coffee on me, I could slap. Why is that so considered so crazy? Because it's me. It can't hurt yourself. It doesn't make sense. If you are able somehow, actually this is more so in marriage, which is the ultimate relationship we're discussing over here, where all of these principles are going to be magnified 1,000 times, with the revenge of bearing a grudge and holding grudges and not judging favorably, and all of this is actually preparing us for that, which is the ultimate v'hafta reich kamocha. Right? What's the idea of having a good relationship in marriage? It's actually based upon this verse. This is the root for it. Right? Treat other people as you would treat yourself, right? Love your neighbor like there's no one closer to you than your spouse. What he's saying is, you're meant to see your spouse, but you're actually meant to see the people around you as you. You're trying to unify yourself with them. In other words, that's not a separate person, right? That's my husband, right? That's my wife, that's my buddy, I work at. We're trying to actually make them into you, a part of you. That's difficult, I'm not going to lie, but that's the goal. The goal is, it's not me and them, we are one. I am part of this unity that's called my family, that's called my children, that's called my extended family, it's called the Jewish people. And ultimately the world will be affected by that. That's what we're trying to do over here. We're trying to become one. At that point, you can't take revenge against yourself, right? So that's the paradigm of loving it like you love yourself. I'm using myself as that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Having said that, here's just the caveat, and I put two classes into one over here into 35 minutes. But on page 16, just at the top, and we'll do Hospitality of Strangers next week, and we'll do speech as well. But I just want to add, this doesn't apply to everyone all the time. Once again, you're not expected. With the Jews are not pacifists. Pacifism, is that a word? It is now. Is not a Jewish principle. Right? If someone's out to get you, crush them. You crush them. You know, in the movies, when I was a kid, you know, in the movies, you used to have the cowboy movies, and maybe I'm dating myself. You would have, like, the guy dressed in white, he was always a good guy with a gun, and you had the guy in black, right, dressed in the black with a black scarf, you know what I'm saying? Like, thing. And he's out, and they're in the Wild West, and the guy with the gun would be like, see, the bad guy, who's dressed in black, he's a bad guy, but he's got no gun. So what would he do? He would throw him a gun. He would take his gun and throw it to the floor to have a fair fight. Okay, that's really stupid. If they really are bad, walk behind them and shoot them in the back. If they're trying to kill you, kill them. And if they're not bad, then why are you having a fair fight? Don't fight them at all.
It's like one or the other. You can't be expected to treat everyone the same. There are concentric circles of life. But if someone's after you, you crush them. They have to be defanged. Now we're going to judge them favorably, whether revenge, bear a grudge. But there's a system. There's a Jewish legal court system. Right? Sometimes there's an American or an English legal court system in order to correct the imbalance being created. But if someone's after you and they're out to get you, you get them. Now, I have to mention it because it's in my head. I am quite familiar with the Israeli army, having family members that served in the army in Israel. And I'm not an expert in the American army, but I believe this to be true. I hope to be true as well, the U.S. army. I believe the Israeli army happens to be one of those just armies in the entire world. It's still an army, right? They're not hugging people. They're like, Iran, yeah, build your bombs. We'll talk about it later. You still have to protect yourself. But it's a very, very just army, right, that happens to exist. But it's still an army, right? They still have to shoot people and shoot to kill sometimes and shoot to maim sometimes, you know, and it's unpleasant. But this idea is and it can still be a very just system that they're in, and it is a just system. Right? I know internally there's a lot of debate and discussion that is happening all the time to make sure that the way they treat other people is in accordance with very specific guidelines. Okay? I believe personally that is reflective of the Jewish people. I really do. I believe that is do they make mistakes? Yes. Are innocents sometimes killed? Yes. Right? No one is going to deny that. Okay? But it's still the way you act towards other people is still within but if they're evil people, you got to get them. And you can even, this is an important point, do actions and certain things to prevent possible harm coming your way. You can be proactive and not always reactive. It's in my mind. It gets a lot of press. Israel gets a lot of negative press. Israeli army gets a lot of... I'm telling you, take my word for it right now if you need to. But with all the negative stuff you read on the internet, where people are judging an entire people, an entire country, by what they hear from other nations and from the United Nations, I don't believe it to be true. In the most part, although mistakes happen, it is a just system. I believe it is very reflective of our people as a nation that we have this. Now, Jewish armies have existed for millennia. And people need to fight to protect their land, to protect their safety, right? To protect their people, right? And even sometimes their religion. So the whole Hanukkah thing was all about, you know? Hanukkah was that. Maybe we weren't so threatened physically, but they were spiritually threatening us, okay? They were doing other things as well, but which did not sit very well with the Jewish people, which was also a major challenge at that time. But as a nation, we have to, so I'm talking as individuals, but as a nation, we have to act that way as well. Because people do judge us. And they hold us to a higher standard. So let me finish with this. We are constantly being judged by the spiritual realm, but by other people, other nations, all the time. And the magnifying glass on our people is very, very great. Right? Especially rabbis, right? Or people who profess to be like Jewish people. Because most of us may get away without looking it, but they see our noses, they know. Right? And it could be on a train, someone puts their head on your shoulder. Personally, I would be like, whoa, dude, get off. You know what I'm saying? Luckily, I wasn't filmed doing that. Someone was filmed with it. But so, mate, we've got to a point in history where all of this is being displayed to millions of people. Some dude finds $98,000 in his drawer. I would have found $98,000. It would have been a big struggle to give that away. I'm paying a lot in Jewish yeshiva tuition, you know what I'm saying? I would have had a big struggle to give that back. Happens to me, thank God, this guy found it. It wasn't even a question. It's not my money. I give it back. Legally, probably could have kept it. I'm not an expert, but I think if you buy something, it was inside there. No one would have found out anyway. But legally, when you buy that, you buy stuff inside it, and that's it. But there's something called a Kiddush Hashem. As individuals, making a sanctification of God's name. We are being watched all the time, being filmed all the time. And the way we put ourselves out, especially in this realm of between us and each other, No one is going to write a report on Rabbi Lawrence in the national press that he was seen eating non-kosher food. No one cares. No one's going to write about any other rabbi or any other Jewish person involved, any other Jewish, that they were not keeping Shabbat. Maybe 100 years ago they did care about that. Now they don't. Now all they care about is this area of Beit Amlach Avero, how we treat other people. It's getting national, international press immediately. Millions of people. How we act in this realm as Jews is having major ramifications upon how everyone else is being judged. Nelson Mandela died recently. Happens to be that whilst apartheid was running, he applied for a job as a lawyer in a Jewish firm. In a Jewish firm. And this Jewish firm, and before he was the famous, was just some dude, right? A black guy in South Africa. And this Jewish firm gave him a job. And they probably thought, whatever, I don't know, this guy, he's black, I don't care about that, I don't believe in apartheid. Gave him a job. That small act, had they dissed him, we would have heard about it. The fact they let him in, we heard a little bit, not too much. But it had major implications for his relationship to the Jewish people, all of us, and the entire world, because of who he became. One small action, meter connected meter, can spiral out. And I think in 2013, going to 2014, we're going to see a lot more of this. There's a lot of people out there who want to judge us negatively, and there's a great potential in how we treat other people so we can get out positively as well. We have to be very aware of this possible threat, but potential for making ourselves, our families, our people, our community in a very positive light. In a very, very positive light. Yeah.
Feeling that either that you should really go up to this person or you really should like back away from this person. So
I don't think if you get such a feeling, you should stay well away. You don't have to confront everything. Avoid the problem. Avoid the problem. For sure. Okay. Stop over there. Thanks for coming out. Take a few minute break. Then we have a great treat. Rebbetzin Lisa Babich.